Hello, welcome to the latest episode of the Talking Rugby Union podcast. This week's show is an association for Sport, Travel and Hospitality UK. Are you ready to hear the stadium roar at Rugby World Cup France 2023? Well, STH UK can help you book your ultimate rugby experience as the exclusive hospitality sales agent for Great Britain and therefore the only place for fans from England, Scotland and Wales to purchase their ticket-inclusive hospitality packages officially. Official hospitality will be available across the 10 host cities in all 9 venues, including semi-finals and the final. An extensive programme of hospitality options are available to suit all needs, all featuring exquisite local cuisine and high-quality hospitality with a French touch of elegance. Demand is high, with availability limited, so don't miss out. Book your place today by clicking on the link in the podcast description. So hello, welcome to this Talking Rugby Union podcast. It's been a very, very long time since we've recorded one of these for so many different reasons. And it seems probably weird to a lot of people that we are recording a podcast when the majority of the rugby is finished for the year. But that's just the way me and Joe Harvey roll. And Joe is once again, not alongside me, he is over Zoom. He is in an airport at the moment, but he's kind of giving up his time to join us on this TRU pod. Joe, how's things?
Oh, it's all right, mate. You know, just 2 hours through security and checking my bags in and all that sort of stuff. But I'm here now. I'm virtually alongside you. We're going to talk about, well, I suppose, you know, there was a Premiership final at the weekend. There's a Barbarians game in England squad. Plenty to go off. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. To be fair, it should be a nice little start to my stint away.
Yeah, a little bit like Joe, we are going to try and cover the international scene and join this podcast. But as you say, Joe, there was the small matter of the Premiership final at the weekend. I was away in York for this, but I was keeping a tabs on the phone. I guess you were tuned in, and maybe the right result in the end, based on the sort of 9 months of rugby in the Gallagher Premiership we've seen.
Yeah, it's difficult to argue when a team that has led the competition from start to finish, won in last ditch scenarios. Funnily enough, I was at that Leicester Tigers Saracens game at Welford Road when Tigers heaved one over in the dying embers of the game. So for me, you know, watching Tigers quite a few times this season, whether that was for TRU or for the Times or whoever it was, good enough to pay me for my time. It was, you know, you couldn't really argue with it. And of course, I saw Saracens a lot less. But I mean, I think more than anything, they proved that they were not any different really to the team that won it all that time ago with the Premiership, before the salary cap stuff that came through. I think it was a real kind of, it really gave us a proper insight into exactly what the Premiership is at the minute, and those are the top two teams. They're going to be the top two teams probably again next season, with 3 and 4 alternating as it always seems to do in recent years.
Yeah, it was weird because I remember sort of 12 months ago, Exeter Quins was one of the finals that everyone will remember for how crazy, how mad, how unpredictable it was. But as you say there, Joe, you couldn't really argue with these two sides being in the final, but they were completely different styles, and the game showed that, and the scoreline kind of showed that. I mean, it was reading the reports and on Twitter, it seemed like quite a cagey opening, but I didn't expect anything less during the build-up last week.
No, and nor should you, because at the end of the day, the two teams that reached the final were two of the teams that kicked the ball most in the Premiership. I think Quins were maybe up there as well, which probably was a surprise a few people. And Northampton, maybe a little bit less, but they still would have been up there in terms of kicking the ball when they had possession. So you can't expect teams to suddenly, you know, ditch their styles of play in order to go for that free-flowing, all-out kind of attack sort of thing. So we got the final we very much were expecting. I don't think I was expecting a Freddie Burns drop goal to win it all.
No, I don't think he was evil, was he?
Not from the looks of it. I think that's why his Instagram lives have been quite so entertaining. I think rumours are on the streets that he's contemplating another offer from Japan as well. So it's sort of, you know, this is so unexpected, because actually, to be fair, with part of that, you know, I think if you'd say who was going to score a drop goal to win the whole thing, it would have been George Ford. Mm. If we were to say who at the best of squad was going to do it. And obviously, George gets injured, looks like it's an Achilles tear or a rupture, which obviously means that he's going to be out for a very long time. So Sale Sharks they'll probably have him in at Carrington at the minute, just kind of seeing how he's going. Or actually, they won't, legally they can't, but you know what I mean? Like, they'll be very interested to make sure that how things are going at this early stage. And I can't imagine Alex Sanderson's too pleased to have let AJ McGinty through his grips. But it does mean opportunities for Kieran Wilkinson, and maybe they'll bring through another fly half in the weeks to come. yeah, it was a hard display of rugby. I don't, you know, we saw tackles very much on the edge. We saw all sorts. I mean, what from what you've seen of it, Chris, what did you feel like it really deviated from the kind of set scripts that we kind of expected at the start of that day?
There's always, as you mentioned it before, Joe, there's always that kind of feeling, and I got it reading kind of your pieces with the Saracens boys that you've done this year. You know, you Andy Christie, you Theo McFarland, and hearing, you know, things from Saracens, that Saracens were Saracens. You know, they had gone through what they had done to get back up from the Championship. They were, you know, finishing second in the league. They were going about the business as Saracens would, and you know, they beat Leicester, didn't they, as well, at the Stoneax. So it's, you know, it had all the makings of Saracens actually just maybe ripping up the script and maybe ripping up the Steve Borthwick fairy tale, if you like. And when, you know, Farrell pulls it level, you know, with 5 minutes to go, I think it was, you think, well, this is Saracens all over. That, you know, they're going to edge it again, and you know, Leicester will come up short. But you know, to have the steeliness, the focus that Leicester did, first of all, to kind of try and shut out Saracens as best they can. I was reading kind of yesterday when I was catching up on a few things that, you know, they were under pressure quite a bit, and that defence was just as solid as it has been all season from Leicester. But kind of been on press conferences with them over the last few weeks, in the build up to the final and the semi finals. Every player has talked about kind of they're a team of fighters, and you know, 12 months ago Leicester probably might have crumbled and they might not have got the result. But even with everything that Saracens have in terms of the experience and the world class players, that they managed to hold on and win it in the most incredible circumstances. So going into the day, I did think, you know, Leicester would do it, but there was always that kind of, oh, Saracens are Saracens. You know, they can turn up and first year back in the Prem win the big prize. But it was Leicester's day, and as you said right at the top, Joe, based on the 9 months of rugby we've seen and based on how consistent and how resistant they've been as well, I do think it was probably the right outcome.
The thing is, and I always, it's difficult because we actually get, as press and maybe particularly TLU, we get such limited access to coaches. Like, if we want to speak to a coach one-on-one, obviously it would take a little bit more legwork, you know, to try and get it over the line. But how much of it does just come down to coaching? Like, how much of that was the difference in coaching between the two teams? Because you look at Saracens, it's a very consistent coaching group. Even when COVID happened and all that sort of stuff, there wasn't really much of a churn, you know. The biggest loss, obviously, being Alex Sanderson to Sale. But, I mean, Joe, you know, the guy that was the skills coach there for a long time, he took on the head coaching role. And, you know, Mark McCall's been ever present apart from his brief spell, you know, I think towards the start of this calendar year when he went on medical leave. And then you look at Leicester's, you know, it's Kevin Sinfield's first season. It's, you know, Steve Borthwick's second full season. And, you know, you look at that defence and you probably turn around and say it's Kevin Sinfield all the way. And, you know, maybe me and you as Northern Rays boys will probably say it was the rugby league coach more than it was anything else. And is it Sinfield? I have to think maybe it is, because it seems like, you know, when you meet a coach and you're saying to him, oh, this is so-and-so, you know, with Kevin Sinfield, he's on the BBC every other day talking about his great work that he's doing for Rob Burrow. You know, he's talking about, you know, all these things that he's done, and everyone knows Kevin Sinfield is one of the names synonymous with rugby league. He's one of the names synonymous with Leeds and the North, and obviously he's from Saddleworth, which is kind of Lancashire, Yorkshire borders, but he really kind of made a name for himself. His son's playing for Leeds Rhinos now, and you know, it's all that sort of thing. Does it just come down to that? Does it just come down to that? Because there's a Sarri's way, and then obviously there's a Leicester way that obviously seems a little bit different.
Yeah, in a way, I think it is, Joe. I think listening to kind of the players over the last few weeks, I mean, Freddie Stewart was brilliant last week in the build-up to the final, and what he was asked about was kind of the Borthwick impact on that coaching group that the Leicester have, and everything he described with Borthwick and in particular Kevin Sinfield were role models and inspirations. And what you said there, Joe, about him being on the BBC every day, Kevin Sinfield doing his runs for Rob Burrow, you know, raising incredible amounts of money for charity, that's got to rub off, you know, on the players, where they're seeing, well, look at this guy. This is the guy we're working with day in, day out. If he's giving all he is to the job and everything above that, why can't we do that for the team? And it's so impressive what they've built there. And I remember doing something with Austin Healey at the start of last season. So it was like whatever it was, November, and it kind of, and as you know, as every person might have done that time, thinking, well, is Steve Borthwick the right man for the job? You know, they've lost seven of the last nine games when the season was started during the COVID year. And the fact is that, and the fact that they've managed to produce this team, but also he's clearly, Steve Borthwick, got the right people he wants around him. And, you know, we're not talking about just Kevin Sinfield here. There are lots made about, is it Alan Waters, I think, as well. There's a lot made about him. And even from a playing perspective, like bringing in your Freddie Burns, he's bringing in your Richard Wigglesworth. Now, when I saw the team on Friday, I was surprised that Ben Youngs wasn't playing. But that's probably what Steve Borthwick's all about. He's probably measured that throughout the week and gone, do you know what? This man knows how to win a final. This man knows Saracens, as Steve does as well. And I think what they've done is surround themselves with the right people, and everyone's singing off the same hymn sheet. And I think that does start with the coaches. So I do think it is down to that coaching group, which has inspired this Leicester team, because every single player, no matter who comes in, no matter if he makes two changes, eight changes, they all seem to be working in one direction. And I think from Leicester's perspective now, the one negative is that Borthwick's name is being linked with the England job, and people, a lot of articles and column inches have been written about him potentially taking over for Eddie in 2023. So that's probably something they're a bit concerned about. But right now, I think Leicester fans will still be enjoying the sunshine and toasting their championship winning team for the first time in just under a decade.
Do you actually buy into that, Borthwick for England? Because it seems idyllic to me. It seems far too, this is what we wish for. Because with England head coaches, you don't necessarily get the first what person that springs to mind. It's never that. Eddie wasn't the first person that sprang to mind. I don't seem to remember 2015. Stuart Lancaster certainly wasn't. When he was appointed all those years ago, I think in the wake of 2011, I think it would surprise me hugely if he was. Because if you speak to him, he says he's there for a Leicester project. Yeah. And the Leicester project isn't one Premiership title, maybe two, and maybe a Champions Cup. It's there for 3, 4, 5 years, you know, better part of a decade even, winning trophies consistently, and then maybe thinking about another job. Mm. I don't personally buy into it. I think whoever replaces Eddie is going to be, and I don't like saying this, is possibly going to be a little bit duller than what we actually want. You know, it's never going to be anyone like, you know, the thing is, and obviously, time will tell on this front. I mean, I could be very wrong. It could be both of us. He could be signed on already for the day after the World Cup, after the World Cup final, for all I know. But I'd be surprised. 2 years now is not, well, 3 years including the COVID year, is not, to me, that's not him, what he wants to do a project. I mean, maybe I would have said the same thing about Paul Gustav when he went to Benetton. I thought he was going to be there for the long haul, and all of a sudden he's in Stade Français living it up in Paris and whatever else. I don't know. I mean, but at the end of the day, who does replace Eddie? That's sort of the question we always have to come back to.
It's been the question for quite a while, hasn't it, Joe? I think probably since the 2019 World Cup final, it's like, well, Eddie's future has always been up in the air. Then he obviously signs the contract extension. I think that was maybe one of the last sort of big press conferences we went down to before COVID, when he was saying, you know, the goal is to make a World Cup winning team. And since then, it has been questioned. I think it's been brought into the spotlight a lot more with England's performances in the last couple of years, obviously, with the Six Nations disappointments, and certainly the last two championships. We'll obviously be coming on to them heading over to Australia, and obviously the defeat on Sunday against the Barbarians. And, you know, there's so many different names on the job. You know, Borthwick, as you say, it seems too good to be true at the moment because of what he's achieved. I think his experience, I was reading actually a piece Ben Coles of the Telegraph did over the weekend, or I think it might have been on Monday, and he was saying, well, you know, he's worked with Eddie before, he can come into that group, he knows the environment, which I absolutely get. But as you say, Joe, how many times have we seen, oh, England is trying to try and get an Alex Anderson or whatever, and it just doesn't happen. You know, Rob Batts has obviously been talked about, and he's spoken about how good the job would be. Ronan O'Gara recently saying he'd love to take the England job. So it, you know, Borthwick for England is, it seems like, you know, the perfect match at the moment, given what's happened over the last 48 hours. But time will tell, Joe. And I think, you know, what happens in the summer with Eddie and England, I think the spotlight will be on that. And even though, you know, we're all building towards the World Cup in 2023, you know, I think Eddie's position has been under scrutiny for the last couple of years now, and I think the Australia tour might play a big part in that. And no doubt Joe will be looking at different names throughout the summer and different headlines about who has been linked with the job.
No, yeah, it's a very interesting one. I mean, I think from a business perspective, you know, the business of winning a World Cup, that is, I don't feel like you scrap things this close to the World Cup. I mean, I was thinking the other day, and, you know, this time next year, we're going to be in chief preparation territory. We're not going to be in, you know, oh, I wonder what's going to happen with Eddie with these summer internationals, which are invariably going to be Ireland and Wales, expecting them before they, you know, get on a Eurostar to France. It's a very interesting one. And obviously that Barbarians game you mentioned there, again, that's not representative of what's going to be, things are going to be like this tour. I think Eddie had a few ideas, but what about what he wanted to look at, like really in the minutiae? And I think those things were tight heads and centres. I don't necessarily think he was looking at anything else. I think Mark Atkinson was very unlucky. I think Will Collier was unlucky. I think, you know, Patrick Schickling obviously being there is great. I don't have an issue with it at all. I don't have an issue with any selections. But I think, you know, the injuries that we've got with Carl Sinclair and you know, everyone like that, it's really laid bare that below that top tier of players, there's actually not really people with like loads of caps below that. And I think the centres are going to be an absolute mess, because if, you know, if Farrell's starting 12, that means George Fairbanks covering full back and fly half. Marcus Smith will probably have to play 80-minute, 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 which isn't always the best thing to do when you kind of go into an environment you've never played in before. This tour is going to be a struggle. I don't expect 2016 levels of whitewash and all that sort of thing. I think it's going to be really hard. Because I don't even necessarily think that the Barbarians played that well. I didn't think it was a good rugby game, you know. We were on our Monday call with Max Stoffick, who's our artistic director, just went, I turned it off after about 20 minutes. It wasn't a good game. I kept it on just purely for the fact that when Patrick Schiffy came on, I was expecting full beast mode from this Namibian-born kind of tight head prop that started off the season at Cornish Pirates, played for Chinner in the past, and all these sorts of things. That's what I was expecting to see. And then all of a sudden, instead of that, he gets, you know, I'm not seeing much of anything at all. And this is Barbarians team, which again has probably got the added morale of, you know, it's been on the sauce all week. I don't actually know what the real secret ingredient is. But this Barbarians team, on the face of it, a Barbarians team shouldn't win at all. It was just an interesting game. I mean, Danny Kerr coming off the bench, that's probably quite indicative of what's going to happen over the summer. I think Aaron Randall's going to start. It's difficult to know what to take from it, Chris. It's very... You can look in all these different directions, but at the end of the day, and I wrote this in my piece that I did on Monday after the squad announcement, you just always end up with more questions than answers. You don't actually have a clue what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot... You know, I don't think you can take much out of it other than kind of, well, where do England go from here kind of thing. And it's interesting you mentioned, like, that you think Randall will get the nod of it scrum off. Obviously, Ben Youngs is... not touring, and I think it's obviously Van Portfleet and Randall and obviously Danny Kerr as well. So it's interesting, kind of, I was reading the piece on Monday, Joe, and looking at sort of the names he's brought back and, you know, whether Kerr does start because he's been there and done that, and Eddie is now thinking, let's go to the trusty guys that have got me to, or know how to win, should I say, and got me to World Cup final in 2019 to try and get a result. I don't know. You know, this whole kind of experimental squads and maybe just saying to the old guard, you've had your time, and bringing in new players over the last year has changed for this tour. And I don't, obviously, you know, you're looking at Billy coming back in and Don Brandt, you know, got injured. Sam Simmons has been out for a while, and it's kind of, well, you can't really not pick Billy Rutherford, given, you know, apparently his performance on Saturday was outrageous in defeat, kind of thing.
It was good. It was very good.
So it's weird. It's weird where we are now. In a way, it feels, you know, like we've turned back time a little bit, and we're looking at an England squad, and you've got your Rutherford, your Danny Kerr, and obviously Farrell's still around as well. So it's definitely interesting to see where Eddie takes this and whether he's thinking now, it's rather than looking at a squad for the World Cup next year, is he now looking at a squad that can get results against an improving Australian side just to maybe relieve a little bit of pressure? I don't know what you think about that, Joe, whether he's thinking these players are at the right now, the ones that can get me a win or, well, a series win down under, and then it will maybe just take a little bit of the heat off me going into the autumn. I don't know.
Is there an argument that there are secret sabbaticals going on? Is there an argument that Eddie's saying to these lads, right, you don't have to worry about it, just go out there, have fun, play rugby, and then you can come back into the squad a bit later on? Because Joe Marler, you know, remember the season Joe Marler retired from international rugby, yeah, and then he came back in a little bit later on? This all, and again, with Joe not getting selected for this all has the air of, you know, are they getting given time off because they are Eddie's favourites, they've got the most caps, you know, and you don't necessarily, and all these players don't necessarily sign extra contracts with their current English clubs unless they think to themselves, oh, I think we're on, you know, I'm on for another England captain. It feels like maybe there's been a conversation had that we're not privy to. I think that's kind of what I thought from the start. Even when John Marlon said, oh, I'm internationally retiring, whatever. I mean, but you don't necessarily go to the Barbarians after that and put on a Barbarian shirt to play England and actually beast the tight head prop on the day. It's just a very unusual kind of environment, I've found. I don't really, you know, sometimes you try and gauge exactly what the thing is, and you're never going to know. I don't think I'm ever fully going to understand what goes on in camp.
No.
And I understand the reason for bringing them back in. They're the best players in the position. I think Billy, in particular, for me, since the Six Nations, has probably been the best number eight. But then that does also open the question of why weren't Max Malins and Benno selected? You know, Max Malins, top try scorer in the Premiership with 16, and then Benno, the Premiership Player of the Year. So, I mean, there's discrepancies again about, you know, these selections. Yes, he's selected a lot of the best players in the positions and he's picked some form for the large majority of them. But then bringing in guys like Guy Porter, who a very fine rugby player, but then to say with about, I think it's 8 or 9 tests? No, it'd be a few more than that. I think it'd be 12 or 13. 12 or 13 tests now before a Rugby World Cup in France. Are you really going to be able to blood this lad and say he's the real deal? Joe Thoppen and Singer, I understand selections like that. But does not make more sense Max Malins, who's just starting right wing for not much in the Six Nations, and then not select him and possibly put someone out there who's, you know, not played a proper test. And I hate calling the Barbarian test not proper test, and I love him, but, you know, he's not playing a proper test in about 2 years. I don't know. This is you know me. I'm just getting this tears all the time.
Yeah, I do not mean Joe. I think part of it is, I tell you, I know you said there that he's had a fine season, Guy Porter at Leicester, but if Manu Tuilagi is fit and if Henry Slade are fit, I don't think he's in there. I think he's, in a way, his hand has been not forced a little bit, but he's had to try and figure out a plan to replace both Slade and Tuilagi, and Porter might be an option, as you said there, Joe. I think what I am surprised at is he hasn't gone with Malins. Really surprised by that, to be honest. And, you know, in a weird way, does the Benno one surprise me? Not really. It's kind of Eddie being Eddie, isn't it?
It's hard, yeah.
It goes back to the point, I generally think he wants players he can trust at this stage. And there is, I do get the sense that results mean more than actually, and it sounds ridiculous when we're, you know, how many ever months out from the World Cup, that results mean more than actually finding a former that you think is going to win the World Cup ready right now. And maybe the fact that we do have to play, you know, New Zealand, I think, in autumn, South Africa, I think we're playing all England, playing autumn, sorry, rather than we. Eddie might be looking at and going, right, this is the time when I'm going to nail down the squad 12 months out of the World Cup. And he is using this now to just get results rather than a summer tours in the past where we have seen, you know, new players getting a chance and maybe, you know, trying to take that chance for the World Cup. What I will say, it will be an intriguing tour because there is a lot of spotlight on England given what's happening in the Six Nations and stuff like that, and given, as you say, Joe, the strange kind of dynamic that is in that squad as well. So it will be interesting, and, you know, I think England need to start well. I really think England need to start well in the first test, because if they go 1-0 down, if there was pressure now on England to get results, there will be straight after that first test next Saturday. So it'd be interesting to see how it plays out, I think.
Yeah, I think just kind of maybe one of my final thoughts, I know we've got limited time. One of my final thoughts is that actually I'm a bit surprised that the RFU haven't made more of an effort to try and get midweek games set up. in order for a lot of those squad players, because there's going to be a fair few of them that aren't playing games, to get game time. I think it was in 2014 when England toured New Zealand last. And I just didn't remember during that time there was a lot of midweek games. I think Anthony Watson started one of those games, and you know, there's a lot of really good players in that squad who've gone on to have pretty good England careers. And I think midweek games are something that should be looked at a little bit more these days. I understand the strain on the body's not, you know, it's changed significantly to what it was. But when you see Ireland screwing, you know, games with the Maori All Blacks to set off to make sure all the bodies are ticking over and all that sort of thing, you have to think to yourself, is that something that England should be doing as well? Just to make sure that bodies keep on ticking and things just keep on going like that. Because for me, it seems a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point, Joe. And just looking at, you know, Ireland have got a game next week, next Wednesday against the Maori All Blacks. And they have another one in between the second and the third test on the 12th of July. And I think that will, as you say, Joe, help them and help Andy Farrell as well. Just think about, you know, his squad selection for those three massive tests and a really sort of massive test for them as well going into next year, because Ireland have been playing on an upward curve, haven't they? Over the last few months and a couple of years or so. Then just before we kind of go on to Ireland, I wanted to just speak about Wales, Joe, because, you know, England is the main topic for us, and we get a lot of access to the press conferences. Wales is another one at the moment. We said before we press record, we are, you know, it's going to be a very interesting summer for them, the way they kind of played against France in the Six Nations. Everyone was like, oh, you know, despite all the injury issues, you know, they're putting in a solid performance. But then, you know, to end it the way they did, in the manner that they did against Italy, you kind of think, well, you know, Wales want to try and put on a positive show against South Africa, but that is very much easier said than it's done. And, you know, going up against the world champions, when Pivac said yesterday, you know, this is the first time South Africa would have played in front of their home fans as world champions, which is bananas, really, when you think about it. It's nearly 3 years ago since they won it. But, you know, it is probably, you know, you look at Ireland and New Zealand and you think that's going to be, you know, two great sides right now going at it. Wales, Africa, you just feel a lot of people have already potentially written off Wayne P that side.
I put it out there that maybe I'm one of them. I'm not really anticipating great things from this Wales team. I think
a lot of South African press have written them off, to be honest, Joe.
I mean, I wouldn't say that's a massive surprise.
No,
but no. I think when he rolls the dice as he has done a little bit again with his squad, I think a bit like Eddie, it shows that he doesn't really know what direction he wants to take things in. I think there's a little bit of uncertainty about exactly what this Wales team's going to look like in a year's time. I mean, Wayne Pivac just as an individual intrigues me. I just can't seem to gauge him. At the best of times, a bit like Eddie, actually. But maybe it's worse because he's a Kiwi, he's very dry. So I think it's going to be hard. South Africa got that, you know, emotional motivation as well as the kind of just the normal motivation of going out there and winning test matches. They're a lot more of a settled side. The coaching hasn't changed. They were really good against the Lions last year. I think this will be the time, just because they wouldn't want to have lost the Lions series on home soil, I think this is the time we'll maybe see them shake their squad up slightly, but I think very small rotations. I reckon maybe, I was about to say 30%, that's quite high figure. Maybe like 15 to 25% of the playing squad or just the squad in general will be a little bit different. But even then, I'd still expect the Springboks to kind of walk away the series with a win. What was the mood like on the Wales press conference yesterday?
It was kind of the first time really that I think a lot of people have heard from Wayne since the end of the Six Nations, and there was a kind of sense that, you know, I think Adam Baird was on there as well, and there's a kind of a sense that in a mood around Wales that they want to try and not repay the supporters, but kind of just put in a performance where they can kind of put to bed what happened in the Six Nations. Yes, you know, a lot of injuries were there for them. They had to contend with that, but they were the reigning Six Nations champions. And the fact that, and this is absolutely no disrespect to Italy at all, but the fact that Italy were able to beat them and clinch the first win in the Six Nations in whatever it was, 7 years, you know, I think puts a little bit more emphasis on Wales to kind of put in a performance against Africa. But as I said, you know, this is a South African side that have continued to be on the, you know, a steady trajectory since the World Cup, given everything that's gone on with COVID. You know, they were 1-0. They did, yeah, they lost the first Lions test, didn't they? But, you know, came back and won it in the way we did. And, you know, to have had a World Cup and then to have won a Lions series and now to be going into, you know, the summer against Wales and then some really interesting autumn internationals as well. It's very difficult to look past Africa potentially putting 3-0 on Wales. But Wales are relishing the challenge. They want to try and redeem themselves from the Six Nations, and that's kind of the vibe that I was getting from kind of what Wayne Tebow was saying yesterday.
I think we were written off from the 21 Six Nations as well. But I think in international rugby, if you write any team off, you do it at your peril. And, you know, you can look back in our Six Nations and the good performance against France and then the poor performance against Italy. So, you know, it's a Welsh team that turns up on the day, which is going to be what South Africa have to deal with. And we're hoping that's going to be a very good Welsh team, obviously. And we're certainly going there with aims that, and things that we want to achieve on the tour. Want to achieve success on the tour, and success meaning winning games of rugby. Now, if we win 1, 2, or 3, it would be a success compared to what's happened in the past, because we haven't won away. So, but from our point of view, it's a huge challenge. Obviously, we're playing the world champions in their backyard at altitude in the first two tests, in front of their home crowd for the first time since winning the World Cup. So they'll be heavily motivated. And look, in Test rugby, you want the ultimate challenge as a player and as coaches, and this is probably the ultimate challenge, South Africa at altitude, you know, coming off the back of our Six Nations and where they're at in their game. So a big challenge, one that I've got to say, the boys are working really, really, really hard, and I would think that we'll be a step up from where we were in our last match.
No, very understandable. They've got a lot of demons to vanquish, I feel. It's very... They're an interesting spot. I think I remember after PVAC's first year, they were saying, oh, should it be PVAC out? Should the hashtags come out already? And I think they came, obviously, the year after they didn't come out because obviously they had tremendous success. I think this year they came out again, I seem to remember. I mean, at the end of the day, I think just give the man control, let him just kind of do what he has to do. Again, with Eddie, they're not just going to blow up the system less than a year out.
Yeah, what I will say is I do think injuries have hampered him quite a bit during his tenure. You know, that I think that first Autumn Nation series, they had so many injuries when he came in. And even like going into the Six Nations, a lot of players missing. You know, I think he's actually, what he did say actually, is that he's pretty happy with where the squad are at the moment. You know, he had, you know, concerns probably about Josh Adams towards the end of the season. Obviously, the big one from, you know, a Gallagher Premiership point of view was Dan Biggar coming off in the semi-final, but he seemed, according to PVAC, he seemed to be in good spirits, hoping to be, you know, play a big part in the series over there. I think, you know, what has frustrated him really is the fact that the reason why he's brought in the young prop, I think it's Harry O'Connor from Scarlets, is because Thomas Francis has picked up, you know, he's had a back problem, which has been sort of a pain for him all season. And I think, you know, it's a yet another big injury and another big name that Wales supporters won't want to see sidelined when they are trying to build towards the World Cup. So, yes, I actually do sympathise with him a bit because he has had some of his big names out. But, you know, at the same time, he would have expected to beat Italy at the end of the Six Nations. And people, you know, when we're in this kind of industry, Joe, you're based on results, aren't you? You can have as many injuries as you want, but you are based on results. And he wanted success out there, and whether that's a one win over against the Springboks, two, or, you know, maybe the unimaginable for some people, three, you know, a win out there might justify some success for Wales.
I think, you know, some summers, like last summer, for example, we kind of look at it and we just go, oh yeah, no, it's just, you know, it's just happening. Yeah. It kind of washes over us and we don't really make too much of it. But, you know, summer and a bit to go into the World Cup, lots on the line, places up for grabs with pretty much every home nation team, which doesn't happen too often, really. Yeah, I think it's going to be massively, massively engaging.
Yeah, I think the fact, you know, just final point on this for me is that, you know, you've got Ireland, New Zealand, which are going to be absolute crackers, and there's absolutely no doubt about that. You know, the recent games they've had over the last few years, one in Chicago obviously stands out, the one at the Aviva when I think Ireland beat them as well was one game that stands out for, for all the right reasons. And you look at that, England Australia always evokes that, you know, rivalry. I think since me and you were growing up, Joe, I'm not sure how old you were, mate, when they won the World Cup, but it's always been a rivalry since I've ever started watching sport, whether that's rugby, whether that's cricket. So that's going to get the juices flowing over the next few weeks. And then Wales and Africa, what better place to test yourself than against a world champion? So for those guys, I think it, you know, the spotlight will be on them because they are kind of bigger tests, if you like. And that's no disrespect to Scotland playing Argentina in three tests. But I guess from Greg O'Townsend's point of view, he can look at the squad a little bit more and maybe able to experiment a bit more, which might not do Scotland any harm because they want to try and get back to the positivity that there was before the Six Nations. I think they were a little bit disappointed with how the Six Nations went. Maybe they can just say, right, let's just regroup from that, use this tour to try and find, you know, some players that might not get a chance further down the line and go into the autumn. So I think Scotland are in a slightly different position to maybe England, Wales and Ireland, but it'd be interesting to see how they get on in South America.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like you talk about Scotland, I think obviously their test kind of calendar is a bit more subdued. Mm. You know, it's not top international opposition. It's Chile who are playing the USA as well in a couple of weeks, and you know, and then obviously they've got Argentina. But I mean, I feel my perception while I was looking at that squad that Gregor, having done the Lions, is on the back foot. So much of his squad. Well, so much of his time and his coaching group was with him in South Africa. So he obviously knows that they're the guys. Like, and that's fine. But I think now it's put him on the back foot and he doesn't actually know what the next step is. Because I imagine, I mean, my perception is that he's going to be Scotland coach after the World Cup, bar something drastic.
Yeah.
So I think he maybe has got one of the hardest jobs in the summer, because if they lose any of those games, which I think that there's, you know, maybe there's the potential for one, I think it asks a lot of questions about actually where the Scotland team's going, because I feel like we've seen improvements in the last few years, but all of a sudden, maybe now it doesn't necessarily feel like it's the, you know, everything doesn't seem as rosy as this thing, I suppose. You know, everything doesn't seem as sort of free flowing as it once was. And I do worry about that. And obviously not taking Finn and Stewart and, you know, players like that obviously makes sense, because it's just, you know, for them, there is key men. But and obviously then getting a full Premiership pre-season in before going into the World Cup pre-season is probably going to be quite beneficial to them. You know, if things go south in South America, you've got to look at Scotland and be a bit concerned.
It's a good point you made, Joe. I think actually Gary, who writes for TRU and covers Scotland so well for us, actually did write something very similar to what you just said there, Joe. After the Six Nations, it was like, well, where do we kind of go from here? And I think what they will want is a little bit of direction from this tour to sort of to South America. And don't get me wrong, I think I said it a few minutes ago, it was kind of a little bit different to the tours that England and Ireland and Wales going on. But Argentina are proving they are a very, very capable test nation. You know, the fact they've played, you know, the top Southern Hemisphere side, they've given New Zealand the game in the last few years as well. So, you know, it's not going to be easy out there for Scotland, but they will want to try to come away from it having a little bit more of a sense of direction, which you mentioned there, Joe, and I'm sure Gary will be keeping tabs on everything that goes on over in South America for us, and, you know, getting us into camp and kind of getting that vibe of how Scotland are feeling going into the autumn series. So, yeah, it'd be an interesting watch. And I think it would be wrong of us, Joe, not to give a shout-out to TRU favourite Johnny Matthews, who has been named in the squad. I think we're all in the TRU circle a bit surprised that Johnny hadn't made it first time round, but due to a couple of injuries and whatever, Johnny is in the squad. So we're delighted to see him there. And he's fully deserved, given the way he kind of certainly finished the season with Glasgow. So, yeah, absolutely every credit. And I'm sure he'll absolutely thrive in that experience, and one he will definitely remember for a long time.
Oh, a Merseyside lad doing good. That's what we love to see.
A Sedgley Park Tiger doing good. I think there's only one of... Well, Johnny's the only one of that. Maybe Max Goffett. Certainly not Max Ashcroft.
yeah, what was it? Sedgley Park, Leeds. A few more in between. Yeah. He's properly grafting to get there, and you kind of got to look at it and just say... Every credit to the man. I mean, it's going to be an unbelievable experience for him in South America. I'm sure he's going to take it with both hands, And we can only wish him all the best because he's, you know, he's a top boy. He's one of Max Ashcroft's best mates. And
yeah,
massively made up for him.
Yeah, and just kind of finally, Joe, it's been a self-indulgence for us both. Obviously, it's been a while since we've done this. Kind of like looking back at the season, like your favourite article that you maybe or interview you've done, and maybe your favourite moment of the rugby season, just to finish with, potentially.
Favourite moment of the rugby season is Italy beating Wales at the Principality.
Yeah.
It has to be. Favourite article? Ollie Thorley at the start of the season. Talking about gardening with Ollie Thorley. I mean, whoever thought we would have seen the day. Ollie Thorley at the start of the season. Genuinely inspired my birthday gift for my stepfather. The Christmas gift for my stepfather as well. It was a great chat. Nice. What's your moment forward / article of the season?
I think probably my moment was I ended up going to Rome for the Six Nations. I was by far away not the greatest game of rugby at all, but the actual kind of experience of watching England away from Twickenham was really good, really heavy. But it was a great experience. Stadio Olimpico, fantastic stadium, Rome, brilliant city. So I'd say on a personal note that. Favorite article. I mean, a lot of it's been based around the national leagues. Obviously, this year with TRU's commitment to national league rugby.
You say that, but you've done some absolute belters when you've done TRU. You've done some belters. I think I know which one is my favourite of yours.
Go on,
Breslau.
Yeah, Breslau was good. Breslau was really good in the lead up to the semi final against La Rochelle in the Champions Cup. Yeah. I think that was good. I always enjoy kind of the uni finals days as well. That was decent this year with it being at Worcester, and always great to speak to the guys at Exeter and Edinburgh and Hartbury and things like that. And you know, I think probably the uni finals day, getting on the pitch and speaking to some of these like emerging stars and people like Keith Lemon at Exeter, who's done a great job. Obviously Mo Hunt, the winner with Hartbury, always great giving her time to us as well. So maybe a combination of maybe the Anton Breslau stuff, which definitely enjoyed doing, a great guy, and maybe uni final days as well. So it's been a different year, I think, for TRU in terms of all the different commitments we've all had. But it's great to be, you know, maybe bookend this season the way we have done, and now looking forward to an exciting summer as well.
Mate, it's going to be a belter. It's going to be a belter, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah,
we'll get our heads down. We'll start thinking about more content again. Mate, it's going to be great. I can't wait.
And before we know it, mate, it'll be the 3rd of September and we'll be starting the National League season, and the Premiership season will be only a couple of weeks away, no doubt.
I think I'll be on holiday again.
Yeah, I think we might need another holiday after that. But no, Joe, thanks so much, as always, for joining us on this TRU podcast. Great to catch up with you. Enjoy your time away. And we'll absolutely catch up when you get back.
Brilliant, mate. Definitely will be. Thank you so much.